Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. My guest today is Kathleen Stress, the executive director of the Food Bank of Central New York. She recently assumed this position, having worked at the organization for the past 6 years. Kathleen, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Can you give me a brief overview of the mission and the different programs of the Food Bank?
Sure. Food Bank is the main food supplier to 11 counties, so it's about 25% of New York State. And we have 410 programs that we make sure have the food available to then feed the community directly. So about 268 of them are emergency food programs, which are food pantries, soup kitchens, and emergency shelters. And then the non-emergency programs are residential centers, neighborhood centers, and daycare centers.
So that's quite a big geographic area then.
Well, you know, we certainly have the rural and urban population. St. Lawrence, Jefferson, Lewis are certainly more rural, where there might be one or two programs that feed a larger portion of the population.
And does the mission of the food bank go beyond food in any way, or is it focused mostly on food provision?
Well, certainly food distribution, acquisition, and distribution is our main focus. But then we have nutrition focus, so we have programs that we're doing out in the community. We have programs such as Kids Cafe and Summer Feeding. So summer feeding is something that would, when the kids are not in school and not receiving that breakfast and lunch, they're able to have a breakfast and lunch at a site sponsored throughout the summer.
I was wondering about that and thinking about your mission, that what was the role of nutrition as opposed to feeding and providing food, and if that has changed in recent years where there's been more relatively greater focus on nutrition. Has there been any trends along those lines?
Yeah, I think the significant trend really came about in 2005. Food banking is based on pounds, so the amount of food that you bring in and then distribute out. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we had started out with donations of any type we were willing to take, and that included things like soda and candy. Mm-hmm. And then as we started to look at, in 2005, the obesity epidemic and what nutritious food actually allows a child to learn in school better and focus, those were some of the things that really drove the no soda, no candy policy. And so in 2005, we adopted that policy where we would focus on fresh fruits and vegetables and making sure those commodities were much more accessible. You can go to any convenience store in any corner market and get soda and candy, but what you can't get is fresh fruits and vegetables.
Yeah, particularly I think that's true in the city, and that sort of leads to one of the other sets of questions I wanted to ask you was I think there's an assumption that many people hold about your primary constituency that it's the poorer populations living in the city. First of all, is that correct?
I mean, certainly we're meeting low-income families, and that is a need. It's not just city, it's rural. And what we've seen the shift is, particularly since 2008, is with the change in food and fuel costs, as those have increased, you've actually seen what were categorized as middle-class families mm-hmm. now needing to use the emergency food network system to stretch their food dollars.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that. Are there aspects of the current constituencies that you serve that would surprise people?
I think the surprising factors are that there are families and the fact that we're also serving military personnel. Mm. You know, up north, we're serving families who are in the military who are on a stipend. And so, again, their food budget is limited, so they need access to the pantry.
And where are we currently as a community here in Central New York, but also as a nation, regarding the problem of hunger? Is hunger still a problem?
Yes, hunger is a problem. And you know what? I think the food bank and other local agencies have been able to identify that it's a local issue. And so obviously we're very appreciative of the community support with donations and foundation support. But what we've realized is that it's not going away anytime soon. And as we move away from the recession, still food costs are prohibit families to access some of the food. So we need to make sure that food is available to them. And it's really the nutrition focus. So it's high protein meats, it's fruits and vegetables, and we want to make sure dairy is available as well.
And in terms of our recent history, is there a trend? Has it been the case, for example, that we have as a nation, as a community, done a good job on eliminating a lot of the hunger, but there's this kind of threshold we're sort of stuck at? I mean, what does the trend look like in recent years?
I mean, over the last few years, I think we've seen probably it's leveling off more than in 2008 when we saw much more of an increase of service needs. At the same time, I think the fundamental drive is how do we move people to self-sufficiency? And so it will really be up to government-funded programs like SNAP, which was formerly food stamps, and programs like that to assist people to get back on their feet and allow them to not only have food available but then pay their rent or mortgage.
And you just mentioned that program. That's been at the center of some political controversy recently. Does your organization get involved in those discussions, or does it stay away from them?
We certainly want to advocate for SNAP. I mean, we have SNAP outreach in five counties, so it's an important initiative for us, and we want to ensure that those families who are eligible for it are entitled to it and remain on it. Certainly, the Farm Bill is a significant portion for us, not only for SNAP outreach, but for our USDA commodities. So we advocate. We have a public affairs official on staff, and she makes sure that she stays in contact with our legislators in Albany and Washington.
And where does your funding for the food bank come from?
We're very lucky, fortunate to have, through Department of Health, our main funding for HPNAP, its Hunger Prevention Nutrition Program.
Now, when you say Department of Health, what level are we talking
New
about?
York State, New Department York State. Of Health,
okay.
That funds us, and that funds our acquisition and distribution. Mm-hmm. And then we also have community support with foundations as well as individuals.
And is there – sort of to take those two things and mix them together, so you're advocating for policy – outcomes that are important to your mission, but there's obviously a political component to it. Are there any tensions that generates in terms of the relations with the donors?
You know, I mean, I think certainly our side of it is how do you support the efforts that are needed? And for us to continue, I guess, to be an emergency food network and not a sustainable food network. We want to just make sure we feed a short-term, whether it's a 6 months or a year process, that part of it is political and advocating for those systems in place that create a long-term outcome. So I'm not sure if there's never been a donor that's brought it up that said, why are you supporting Farm Bill or why are you advocating for this? I think those who support the food bank understand that there is a political piece to it as well as a basic need. We need to feed people.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with the Food Bank of Central New York's Executive Director, Kathleen Stress. You mentioned something earlier I wanted to come back to, which is the spike in demand for your services that you had in the economic downturn. You mentioned 2008 as the year where you really saw this. Could you speak a little bit more about what you saw and what the pattern was here in Central New York? Because one of the things that was often said and written about Central New York is it didn't have the same kind of hit that a lot of other places did.
Well, I have to disagree. In our 11 counties, we really saw what we would say was a 12% increase in need. Mm. And that is our pantries reporting back to us that the amount of families that they served or the amount of meals that they provided had increased. So they report out monthly to us. And so that 12% increase really said to us, who is that demographic? And when we were able to analyze it and go out to the sites, we saw many more families. And the reason we saw many more families was either a loss of a job. So as some of the organizations in the local community were moving out, those people were being impacted, that they only were down to a one household income. Some folks, certainly from medical needs, that shifts their ability to be able to pay for food. So they're trying to supplement with the use of a food pantry because now they have medical bills to pay for. And we certainly saw probably an increase of service in regards to new faces. So although we have a stream of folks who were on a continuum that were using services, we saw newer faces coming into the service.
And I was also curious to know whether that downturn made your fundraising more difficult. I mean, money, you mentioned the state being the main supplier. Things got tight there for sure, but also with nonprofits, donors also held on to their wallets.
You know, in retrospect, it's interesting for the fact that we would have anticipated cuts. We had a small cut from Department of Health, but we were able to absorb it. And then at that time, the community was very, very generous. And I think because it came down to a basic need of feeding people and the realizing that that needed to be done, I think probably other not-for-profit cultural and arts suffered more during that time because then people focused more on feeding. So we were able to continue to move through and supply food. No one was ever turned away, and that was through the help of the community.
So the donors then and the community, it sounds like what you're saying is they kind of made their own priority assignments there, and the core things like food then didn't suffer as much as what we might think of as the luxury things like art.
Exactly. And again, I think that was because the focus was certainly the highlights in the media of how fuel had escalated and the food prices. It was everything from corn to bread to milk. The prices were going up, and so people could see that and identify that. And then I think when Food Bank made their appeal, it certainly was in the limelight of this is a basic need.
And thinking about the needs that people have for food, I was wondering whether there are – I mean, we've been talking about a bigger cycle, which, you know, rides along with the economic situation. But I was curious whether there are micro cycles, too, that are, say, within a given year that you folks have experienced and cycles that tend to repeat year to year. Can you say more about that?
Yeah. So ideally, I think people focus on the holiday time as a time to give and when people might actually need a meal or a food package, when realistically it's summer for us. That's our spike in need. And that is because children are out of school and those children are generally receiving that school lunch or breakfast. And during the summertime, they're not having that. So the issue for us is we have summer feeding sites, but really only about 18% of those school children are using those summer feeding sites. So then the pantries actually see an increase in service because the families come to them and get the food so they can make the meals at home. So the really summertime is probably the busiest time for us.
I'm talking with Kathleen Stress. She's the executive director of the Food Bank of Central New York. I was curious to know whether the Food Bank ever tries to partner with other service organizations to integrate the provision of other supportive services with that, using the provision of food as the point of contact, so to speak.
Well, I think our greatest partners, besides our funders, are actually our member programs. So all our food pantries and soup kitchens and shelters. Particularly our food pantry focus is that we partner with them. So not only are we making sure that they have food supplies to feed the community, but we're also providing best practice training for them and education on how to do referrals to the community. So when someone comes in to access food, we're also going to ask you, have you been unemployed? Are you eligible or have you ever considered applying for food stamps? Do you need WIC or HEAP? So we're going to make sure that we're looking at those social service systems in place and making sure that those who need them are available to be referred to them.
I was wondering about that, and I was even thinking about maybe something related to health and healthcare as well, because you could argue that moment of the food provision is kind of a moment of trust. And my impression is that a lot of the barriers for some folks getting help is that they don't trust the system and the potential support services that are available. So I thought maybe this was the point to get them in the system.
Yeah, I think the focus for us at the food bank and certainly in the pantry system is that when you come in, we know, number one, it's really hard to ask for help, that it's hard that you have to ask for someone to help feed your family. So we want to make sure that it's done in a dignified and respectful way. And a majority of our pantries are set up in a client choice system. So really what that is a mini market experience for those families who come through. So it's set up with shopping area that the food is shelved, that you can come through and pick out the items that you would want for your family versus just being given a bag of food and being pushed on your way. So on top of that, it's making sure that what's in that meal package that goes to those families is nutritious. So the pantry's responsibility is focusing on making sure that there's a meal package that fits my plate type of initiative. So two fruits, two vegetables, a meat, a dairy.
You're referring to the First Lady's My Plate
initiative. Right. And so we focus on that kind of nutrition aspect to ensure that that meal has all four main components, as well as then referring out to any kind of wellness initiatives. We have a Just Say Yes to Fruits and Vegetable initiative where we do nutrition education. We also do regular nutrition education and food demonstrations at our pantry sites as well as at the food bank. So we ensure that people are not only getting food but knowing what to do with it, how to prepare it, and then how to stretch your meals with that commodities as well.
And you've talked at several points about different ways in which you provide the food, and that was something I wanted to ask you about. How do you approach reaching out to people and finding them right where they are versus having them come to you for the services, even though you've got these places spread out around Central New York?
I think some of the outreach initiatives are certainly really based on the pantry system. So where they're located, they have built a community network. They're probably fundamentally the grassroots organizations that started before the food bank and have been in place. So it's through that network of not only maybe their paid staff, but a majority are run by volunteers. That volunteer word of mouth is so reliable for us to be able to ensure that word gets out, that services are available. We also have a referral system through our website that any individual can contact us and find out where a pantry might be located near them, or our Food Sense program, which is our food buying club. So certainly we have that available. And then in our five counties, of Oneida, Oswego, Cayuga, Cortland, and Onondaga, we have food stamp no-op workers that are out there. They're at the member programs, and they're at health clinics and flu clinics and neighborhood centers. So they're chatting with people and not only talking to them about SNAP program, but also the food bank services.
And I've read that if we're just going to look at this from an efficiency standpoint, it's better for people to simply give money rather than to donate food. I was wondering whether you think there's a broader social value in having people in the community donate food as well as money.
Well, I certainly, to put it in the context, it's because of our large bulk buying power. So we buy by the truckload. So a dollar going to a local grocer is not going to acquire as much as we would be able to purchase with our dollars. So every dollar that's donated is able to turn into about 2.3 meals for us back into the community just because we buy by the truckload. Certainly, we don't discourage food drives, and there's a lot of local companies who do food drives and fund drives at the same time. But I think the emphasis on if we want to continue to try to feed as many people throughout the 11 counties that we serve, that a fund drive certainly enables us to do so because of our large bulk buying power.
In case you've just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations, and my guest is Kathleen Stress, the executive director of the Food Bank of Central New York. Well, as executive director, you follow in the footsteps of Tom Slater, who I understand really helped to build up the organization in his time in that position, and you now have a fund named in his honor. I was curious to know whether there are new initiatives or new programs that you're currently giving some thought to expand on the base that's been provided.
Sure. Some things that we're trying to focus on this next year, as the first year of our three-year strategic plan, is we have first stages of a pilot program for a diabetes initiative, and where we're looking at working with local community and county funding, as well as the county health department, to focus on when someone comes into a pantry, talking to them about diabetes, making sure diabetic food is available, or not diabetic food, but food that a diabetic can have, and then also hooking them up to a referral system to ensure that they have a wellness exam or blood test.
And while we're on that subject, just quickly, if someone is listening and wants to reach out to you folks, either as a supporter or they need services, what's the best place for them to go?
Certainly, I would drive people to our website, which is foodbankcny.org, and we have a program search, but also a Get Help section on there. And if not, they certainly can call our front desk, and we'd be happy to assist them, and that's 315-437-1899.
Okay, great. Question about you now. What has drawn you as a person to this kind of work?
Well, I've always been in not-for-profit, so I don't know the corporate side of the world. I started out in childcare, and always serving low-income families in childcare. And when I moved into Syracuse, I worked for Salvation Army and ran their childcare programs. And it was really that, I think, that made me want to remain in not-for-profit work to begin with. But looking back, I always had those couple of kids who would come in after a weekend and say, Kathleen, I didn't eat, or we didn't have enough, so I didn't have enough to eat. And at the time, all that I could do really was give them a snack or a small thing to take home because I was an after-school program. And so when Food Bank approached me and asked me to come on board, I realized I could make a larger impact and make sure that those kids in the community could be fed and their families would have food on the table. So for me, it really was a transferable reason to move to food banking. And I got to tell you, I love it. I wouldn't change a thing.
Now, you work on the administrative side of things, but I was curious to know whether there is one experience or maybe a set of clients that stays with you more than the others.
Yeah, when I first started, we always encourage everyone to go out and visit our programs. And I had gone out to visit a fresh foods program. And that is where we pick up from local grocery retailers. We pick up their close-code dated food. And we drop it off to a distribution center that afternoon. And so those families can take that food home free of charge, and they use it for their meal that night. And so I'm at the fresh food site, and I actually went to just observe and instead ended up being sucked into volunteering. And I was at the kind of dairy table, and they had Danable yogurts, little drinkable yogurts, in little just separated from the pack. So those were there, and this woman came in with her two little boys who were probably maybe 5 and 6. And they were just the cutest things with these giant brown eyes. And they eyeballed that Danables from a mile away. And when they got up to the table, you know, their eyes were just staring at me. And Mom came around as she was getting her produce and came to the dairy table. And they didn't speak English, so but their eyes told me that they wanted those Danables. And I was able to just say to them, go ahead, go ahead. And Mom put them in the bag, and those children smiled. And I tell you, I felt like a queen given. And I knew that that was a good thing. So, yeah, that's an indelible. Those little eyes have left a memory in me.
And thinking about your organization as a place to work, you were recently ranked, I believe, as one of the 10 best places to work in Central New York. So what do you think you've got right in the way that you approach your employees?
Well, first of all, we've got the right employees, so that's a helpful start. I think a couple of different things. We certainly, as much as we're touting wellness out in the community, we tout wellness for our staff. So we have wellness snacks available. We have wellness initiatives that we do, like a step-up challenge or a encouraging staff to walk each day for half an hour in addition to your half an hour lunch break. And then we certainly have a fitness room that when we moved to the new distribution center, we were able to make come to fruition. But I think from the environment standpoint, it's a collaborative environment. There's not one person. Even though I'm an executive director, I still rely on a lot of input into other decisions and initiatives that we move on. And so I think that's what really makes us whole.
Let me get to the three questions at the end. What's the title of the chapter of life you're currently living?
This is a roller coaster ride. The chapter is called It's a Roller Coaster.
Second, what's your worst trait?
I have high expectations for all.
And finally, what professional or creative achievement in your life so far has surprised you the most?
My best creation was my son, Orion. So that was the best thing I could ever achieve as a title as Orion's mom.
That was Kathleen Stress. Kathleen, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thanks for having me here.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO, Conversations in the Public Interest.